Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to InnovaBiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
The most important thing you can do is understand your personal brand, understand your personal brand story, and use that as the seeds of growth in your business. Because once you understand your true, authentic personal brand, everything you do thereafter, every time you speak, every time you appear online, everything you do in your business is another piece to that personal brand puzzle, and it all comes together to create a really synergistic business model for your customer base.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with the executive coach and psychologist Richard Orbe Austin and with Rebecca Arbona of Brand True, then do check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Kitty Parker of the Kitty and Miles Buyers Agency. Now, Kitty is a trained psychologist that bought property in her spare time, and when people asked her to help them buy property because she was good at it, she started her buyer's agency. Within her first 12 months of operation, she achieved a multiple six-figure revenue and was a finalist in the Real Estate Industry Awards. She puts these achievements down to providing her clients with exceptional customer service and being highly skilled at property market data analysis and extracting insights from that data. In our discussion today, Kitty talked to me about her process of serving her clients, which begins with listening to their story with empathy. We talked about why being data-driven is important in any business and how to adapt to rapidly changing data. And she described her principles of finding pain points of her clients and filling their needs. Sound familiar? Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Kitty Parker. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from, well, relatively up the road compared to a lot of our guests, Sydney in Australia, Kitty Parker, who's the founder and director of Kitty and Miles Buyers Agency. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Kitty. It's a real privilege to have you here as my guest.
Thank you for inviting me. It's an absolute honor to be here. Thank you.
Paris Cutler, who was our guest on episode 291 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you and introduced us. So big hello to Paris.
Oh, bless. You know, thank you for her introducing me to you. She spoke very highly of you and suggested that we would have a fantastic conversation.
Yeah. Yes. And we had a lovely time with her as well, having a conversation and lots of follow-up stuff been happening on LinkedIn as well.
Good
now, as a buyer's agent, you talk about it being a values-driven team and differentiating yourself with that and focused on education and intelligence based on data about property market and knowledge about the property market and the property buyer's experience. So I'm really interested to kind of delve into your business model today, but I have to say that I had no idea what a buyer's agent was until about 10 years ago. I met someone in a networking event who was a buyer's agent, and I said, oh, what's that? And before that, I had no idea that such a profession existed. So maybe for other people that might be like that, for me, tell us a little bit about what does a buyer's agent do and why would you engage a buyer's agent?
You're not the first person to ask that question. Absolutely not. I think the concept of a buyer's agent is more well known internationally. So in the US, it's very common for people that are purchasing a property to have an agent assist them, advocate in particular for them in the buying of a property. Ditto with Europe. But in Australia, we seem to still rely on sales agents when it comes to the selling of a property. But people tend to have a bit of an Aussie do-it-yourself mentality here when it comes to buying property. So people feel the purchase of property, they can do themselves, but the selling of property, that's when they hire a professional. So professionals such as myself, a buyer's agent, exists to squarely advocate on behalf of a property buyer in the purchase of property, whether that be a residential property, investment property, commercial property. My focus is squarely in the corner of the property buyer and helping them through the process from the sourcing of property through to the negotiation, auction, getting the deal over the line, and helping them through to settlement. So it is a bit of a novel concept in this country, but it is fast growing. So I foresee in the next, say, 5 to 10 years, the buyer's agent would be a lot more well known in Australia.
It's fascinating. And how did you get into this business?
To be honest, I don't have a 30-year history in real estate. My background was as a trained psychologist, and I was undertaking my doctorate in actually the School of Business at a university here. I fell into business per se from psychology, and it was when I had sold that business that I was contemplating what to do next. And as I had purchased property along the way throughout my years in business, it was a business colleague that said, have you ever thought of being a buyer's agent, because you've bought for so many other people as well as yourself, and people tend to come to you as the property whisperer. Have you ever thought of doing it as a career? And I hadn't, but thought, oh, we'll give it a whirl, and actually realize it merges my background in psychology, business, statistics and data. It just merges everything so well with my I guess natural flair for a property. So it brought everything together rather nicely.
That's fascinating. I was interested to hear that, you know, you've got a psychology background, and a lot of, I mean, buying and selling kind of comes back to human behavior in a lot of ways. And if you consider the property buying that most people do, I mean, it's probably once or twice in a lifetime they buy their own personal home. And there's a very strong emotional aspect to that. And sometimes that means they perhaps don't make the best decision from the point of view of investment value or some other things that might come into their lifestyle. Whereas with investment property, it's probably a little different, the approach. So what are some of the mistakes people make when they do it themselves?
Okay, goodness me. Well, firstly, you're spot on with what you mentioned about the purchase of property being one of the biggest financial outlays that people are likely to make in their lifetime, whether that be for buying their own home or whether it be an investment purchase. It's a large sum of money. So regardless as to whether it is investment or home buying, there always is a bit of emotional nervousness and emotional attachment in some form to the purchase. Obviously, for a home buyer, the attachment is greater and more salient, but still for the investor buyer, as much as they feel that it's just about dollars and cents, it's a large, substantial amount of money. And you'd be very surprised how many people still make little mistakes with an investment purchase because they cannot completely remove the emotional component or their biases or et cetera. So when it comes to what are the key mistakes, or I shouldn't say mistakes, everyone buys in the way they know how, and with the media fueling a lot of misinformation, I would hate to say people are making, you know, groundbreaking errors in property buying, because as I say, everyone does the best they can. But so to speak, the biggest mistake people make is looking at the media, whether it's newspapers, television, radio, online, and assuming the media's take on the property market is factual. And while we all are aware the media sensationalizes things, because obviously news sells, So many people still fall into the habit of assuming what they read, hear, and see is factual. So if the media says, for example, at the moment during COVID times, the Australian media is talking about doom and gloom in the property market and everything, you know, collapsing, and that's actually not happening. And the data, statistics, and empirical evidence shows that that's not happening. But if you're watching the news, if you're reading online, or if you're listening to news, you may be mistaken for believing that, you know, we all should be nervous because the sky is falling, per se. So listening to media hype, I would say, would be the number one. Veto that, folks. Don't even go there. The media has their own agenda, and they will not be providing you with accurate property buying data and information.
And the thing that always gets me about the media, and I've noticed this particularly because I'm watching exchange rates at the moment with my business. Obviously, the Australian dollar exchange rate sank dramatically with the lockdown that we started here and the impact on our economy. And that was a real hit for my business, because a lot of, whilst I have a little bit of income in US dollars, most of my outgoing is US dollars. So all of a sudden my costs went up skyrocketing, and then wow. I was watching the exchange rate. And in the news, they bring on all these economic experts from different places, and they're talking about different things. And I think they're ignoring fundamentals. So because I was sort of doing my own research through, you know, channels that I thought were reputable, and I thought, no, this is all wrong what they're saying. And luckily the Australian dollar is at about an 18-month high now. So I took the gamble and said, I'm just going to hold on because I think it's coming back. And I'm guessing the same is true of property. That, and I know my wife said the other day, they were talking about property markets collapsing, and she said, well, that hurts us. And I said, well, only if we want to sell, if, you know, if you believe that. So where do you get accurate data from, and you know, how do you draw insights from that data?
Oh, that's a good question. That's almost like my the secret ingredient in the special sauce, so to speak. You're going, look, I draw my data from a number of different areas. There are some very obvious data portals for the property industry that supply the industry with what I consider a very basic form of property market data. I feel if people look at such data as gospel, and look, I'll be honest, there's a lot of people in the real estate industry that turn to RP data and think of it as the be-all and end-all, and this will tell the story, and whatever is written there is gospel. However, there are different markets in this country, and, you know, in particular, Sydney, and secondary to that, Melbourne. These markets are very fast-paced markets, and when you're looking at, say, research portals that are available to people in the real estate industry, and the data is even 3 months old, even 6 weeks old, in markets such as Sydney and Melbourne, that data is old. It's near redundant. You can take aspects of it as potentially a starting point, but you have to access more real-time data and current metrics to really get a solid picture of what is going on at present in the property market. And when you're a buyer's agent and you're buying for clients now, when you're buying for clients next week, the data that's held that's, say, 3 months old or 6 weeks old is a very little current benefit to your client if the market has changed. And generally speaking, the Sydney and Melbourne markets, I find personally through my experience, they swing in at the minimum fortnightly cycles. So what may have occurred 2 weeks ago will not be occurring now. So aside from the typical portals, I access current economic data. Socioeconomic data is fundamentally important. At times like now, health data is also extremely important. What is happening with regard to lockdowns and impending lockdowns will absolutely forecast an effect on the property market. With that in mind, also, one thing I look at, but I always discount, and I had a bit of a dispute with a few people in economics and finance when COVID first really took hold in March this year. I had a number of people in economics and finance noting that because the share market had just bottomed out, that property was obviously going to decline by 20 to 30%. And I pointed out to them that the property market usually does not follow the economic climate. And I think that is, for your listeners, one of the top pieces of secret intel I could provide, that just because we may be in economic crisis, recession, etc., the property market does not follow the economic market in this country, and neither many countries around the world. This was seen in the GFC, the dot-com bubble burst. There are so many times historically where you can trace the property market highs and lows and the movement of the cycles, and they do not follow the global economic markets. So it's definitely important to source data, in summary, from multiple avenues and actually piece that together to determine realistically what's going on. That's the long answer for you, Jürgen.
Yeah, and I'm guessing the secret sauce that you have and your team is taking that data and drawing the insights from that and even looking forward. So, I mean, a lot of, you know, you talked about the share market, and one thing that I always laugh about, you know, economists, and my daughter's an economist, so I can hang it on them a little bit, but they put up the chart of the share market and say, you know, here's what it's done. It's gone up, it's gone down, and recently it's gone down. And then when the pandemic hit, and now it's kind of recovered, but, you know, that's sector by sector as well. But then they say, well, you know, so here's what's happened. And of course, most advisors tell you, well, historical performance is not a predictor of future performance. And yet all the predictions that these experts do is based on what they look at historically. And then they go back and say, well, okay, we're in a global pandemic. Let's see what happened during the Spanish flu pandemic back in 1918. Let's have a look at what the share market did then. And I thought, well, yeah, that's, you know, that's 102 years ago. We didn't have the internet then. We didn't have modern communication methods, there's a whole lot of things that were completely different then. So how's that a predictor for what's happening today? And I'm guessing that the secret sauce is really knowing what to make of the data and knowing how to use it to actually benefit your clients.
Absolutely. And it's, as you mentioned a key word earlier in this conversation when you mentioned fundamentals. And I think at a time like this, when you're looking at fundamentals, you're very much looking at, for me, in my arena, you're looking at home buyers, investor buyers, and their fears, their emotions. You're not just looking at, well, are people employed, looking at the employment rate or unemployment rate. You really have to look at people's psychology and look at where their hearts and emotions are aligned, because that is going to be an absolute precursor to the actions they take, and the actions they take therefore is a precursor to what is going to happen in the property market. And at a time like this, you know, government incentives and the government driving and fueling home buyer incentives, that is likely to help push forward buyers into the market. And I foresee that when, you know, it comes a time where government stimulus packages and whatnot start to retract, it's likely then the government will have a ding ding light bulb moment and go, right, we really need to get the property market helping bolster the economy. What can we do to encourage property buyers? And there's likely to be things like further abolition of stamp duty or other incentives for home buyers to psychologically, more so than financially, some of it is financial, but a lot of it is to psychologically encourage them to step into the market and fuel the movement in the market.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting, interesting perspective. So let's switch gears a little bit, and it's around the customer service that you approach. So you told us earlier about what a buyer's agent does. So essentially they're the advocate for, let's say I want to buy property. So instead of me doing everything myself and learning the process as I go and probably forgetting some key things until they become critical, you're the person that walks me through that process and perhaps advocates on my behalf, perhaps even goes to an auction and bids. So how do you start the whole process? If I come to you and say, hey, Kitty, I'm in the market for buying a home, how do you start the whole process?
Funny you ask that. I find in my business, the best way for me to start that process is allowing my potential client to share their story. You'd be surprised how many people, by the time they get to me, they have this welled up story of their experience so far buying property or what they're looking to achieve with this property. And they just have not had someone to really share that story with who can empathize and can help guide them through, giving them even at that stage basic tips and guidance and recommendation and a way of helping tangibly form that story into something they can progress with. So the very first thing I do is I listen and I give my clients the floor and I let them talk to me about what they've experienced, what it's been like, what have been their pain points per se, what they're hoping to achieve. And really, it's a storytelling moment. And I just find people love to get it off their chest. So it's a bit different. I think a lot of people in property think it's about a solution-focused conversation. And that's an aspect to it, of course. But I realize that storytelling and allowing people to share is what really creates the engagement. And I think that's what has been one of the key success points for my company, allowing people to share their story.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, to me, that's like you mentioned, solution focused. So to me, that's like, let's understand the problem first before suggesting a solution.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm.
So, and how do you find people take that on board as clients? Because I guess you mentioned earlier that, you know, in Australia, we tend to do it ourselves when we're going to buy property, whether it's the home. And I would, you know, often people say that the investment property is the trickier one that you need to get right. But I would say the own home is maybe the one that you really need to get right, because that's the one you're going to be stuck with. The investment property is much easier to sell again and you're less attached to it. But how do you find that people respond to that process and take it on board and open up to you in terms of their experience and what they're looking to achieve with the property that they're looking to buy?
I think to answer that, I think honestly, looking at Australians culturally, we can be a bit shy to take the first step. But once that door is open, I feel that there is an inherent desire to trust. There's an inherent desire to be able to hand over and work as a team and build on something. It's just that initial kind of getting the foot in the door where Aussies can be a little bit cynical. But I think that storytelling and allowing that opening up and sharing, while me asking questions and actively listening and helping my potential clients fine-tune some of their story, fine-tune some of what they're hoping to achieve, and asking sometimes hard questions. I'm not afraid to ask hard questions of potential clients, like, why do you want that outcome? Or why is that important to you now? Would this other option be preferable? You know, I'm just throwing it out there, being the devil's advocate. What do you think? And I think that engaged conversation really helps build trust and builds an initial sense of, wow, this person really cares about my property journey. And I feel comfortable talking to her and sharing with her. And obviously, if they ask particular questions and they have particular issues or ways forward that may not be conducive to the outcome they actually say they want, I speak up. I'll question. I'll say, what about we look at it this way? Or what about we look at it that way? And this is even before they've signed up with me. So all of this is like in an initial conversation. And I feel that helps, as I say, build the trust, as well as show, it helps me present without selling a little bit of my expertise in the areas. So they're able to get a few answers to their questions. They're able to see I can think outside the box without me actually ever saying to them, this is what I'm good at, or this is what I can do for you, or these are my skills and talents. By just having a good conversation and showing through action what I do, I feel it helps to, I don't want to say make the sale, but it helps make the sale without even attempting to make the sale. And I'm always open to potential clients. I'll say, go away, think about it, call other buyer's agents, do your own research, call and get as much information to make you feel comfortable as possible. And if you want to go ahead with me, I'd love that. Feel free to come back to me, but I want you to go and explore. And I actually find they appreciate not having that sales pitch, but I guess the undercurrent, being a little bit smart and savvy about it, is I'm showing these potential clients what I can do, my skills and expertise, without them feeling pressured. And I think that in particular works for Aussies.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, there's so much to love about that. I would say that's really fundamental. I mean, this is human marketing at its core. You know, you share information, you make sure you understand the goals that your client is, or who's not yet a client, is trying to achieve. You showcase alternatives for them. And by doing so, I mean, I would say it's more than just showing that you know your stuff. It's showing that you actually care about them achieving their goals. It's not about buying property right now. It's about them achieving the goals that they've stated themselves. And then you even, and this is wonderful, and I think I would encourage everybody to do this sort of thing, you know, have the confidence in your own abilities to say, go and check out other people. And if somebody else is a better fit, then go with them.
100%. And the number of people I've said that to, I've said, you need to choose the person that you feel you gel with, because this is a huge purchase and it does require teamwork along the way. And so you want to align with the professional that you just feel you connect with. And sometimes that will be me and sometimes it won't be me. And it's absolutely not personal. And it's really about my potential client choosing the person they feel they gel with.
Hmm. Yeah, well, in some ways it is personal because it's a personal choice who you gel with, but it's not an insult it's not going to hurt my ego if somebody says to me, I prefer to go with your competitor because I gel with them better.
Yep, absolutely. Completely agree with you.
And so what's the journey? So you go through a whole process of identifying the goals and aspirations and then looking at, well, is it an investment? Is it buying a home? What sort of area, what sort of budget, I guess, just comes into it and a whole lot of other things, how to get financing, what regulations didn't be needed in place. I don't want to dig into all of that because obviously there's a lot there. But what sort of process do you do then in terms of once you get to a decision point saying here's some property options, I will now go and advocate on your behalf. And then even after you've actually bought the property for the client, what's sort of the process and the journey there?
Okay. Well, let's say we've got the brief completely, whatever the client brief is particular to the client. Let's say we've got that sorted. I guess the next stage of the journey then is me networking. I'm all about networking. So it's about me being able to source potential properties for my clients, not only in areas where they would be able to source for themselves, but a lot of the behind the scenes network areas. So whether that's directly with sales agents and their database as to whether they have potential properties available to sell that are coming up on their database that aren't yet available, whether it's a client knowing the area, a specific area they wish to live in or buy in, and me actually approaching homeowners directly in that area to see whether they are looking to sell. So there's a myriad of ways where I can use my detective work behind the scenes to source, qualify, and shortlist properties for my clients. But then after that, we get into, I guess, the more exciting part, which is correctly appraising a property. So understanding, again, in the current market, what a property is realistically worth and what a particular property is likely to sell for in the current market. Discussing that with my client and then formulating quite a unique strategy for that particular property and my client, like that particular situation. Discussing that with my client. And then, look, if I'm very honest, I can't put it any other way, but then going in for the kill. So I'm very assertive and aggressive with my negotiation strategies and tactics. I feel that for most people selling property and sales agents, no one wants to dilly-dally. No one wants silly, fluffy games and hullabaloo. So I have found that efficiency and getting all your ducks in a row and everything strategically placed ahead of time is the best way to acquire for my clients. So I will go in on their behalf, no matter what the acquisition strategy, and close that deal. whether it's a regular sale, or whether it's a sale at auction, or whether it's a pre-auction offer, any of those purchase methods, I will go in on behalf of my client and go hard, go really hard for my client to get the most efficient, best price possible under the most favorable terms for my client. So we close that off. I do have, obviously, I've got 100% success rate with my clients. I have a 94% success rate at auction. So there is a very, very, very high probability there when we're speaking statistically that if I'm going forward to acquire a property for my client, that there's a, you know, more than a 9 out of 10 chance that we will get that property. And then I support my client, assist my client practically to get everything done that needs to be completed to package that deal, close it off with a nice red ribbon, so to speak. And I also then, I don't want to say hold their hand, but I do support them through to settlement, because sometimes it is after the initial acquisition and after all the emotions settle that my clients are, well, what do I do now? How do I actually make this property mine? Or if it's an investment property, oh, I need to find a property manager, or what do I do now? So there's obviously the first obvious emotionally charged hurdle to get over, but then there's a more subtle hurdle as we move towards settlement and my clients just making sure everything is neatly prepared, and I help them with that right up to when they obtain the keys to either their new home, or we've transferred everything over to very solid property management on my client's behalf. Very end to end, and I'm there all the way, Jürgen, and I take not just great pride in assisting my clients, but I really want to see a job well done. I really want to see my clients at the end go, A, I couldn't have done this better myself, Kitty. There's no way I could have done it like you did it. Or I do not believe another buyer's agent could have done it as good as you did. So I really do take pride in a job well done for my clients.
And I love that, you know, you've got the process down in every step and really clear, and again focused on the outcome based on that initial discussion of understanding the client's goals and aspirations.
Yeah. And it's also about every step of the way I communicate with my clients, as well as providing them with updates on, say, the upcoming process. So when they engage my services, I advise them on the initial process and what to expect. When we move to, say, the negotiation and acquisition part, again, I advise them on what to expect and what the process will look like. Ditto in the lead up to settlement, because it's not just about being there for my clients and supporting them, but it's a really nerve-wracking experience for them. So it's about providing them with expectation management, so that they're not just in the dark, you know, crossing their fingers, knowing that, you know, oh, well, Kitty knows what she's doing. I've given them the information each step of the way so that they know the upcoming expectations, and so that they can rest easy and feel like they've been advised each step of the way as to what's likely to happen next. And that to me is also, I think, one of the most important parts of the journey. It's knowing that while we may be an expert in whatever field we're in, that the person that's coming to us for our assistance, they're not. And that they may have no idea as to what's upcoming. And that can create fear and uncertainty. Even if we as experts are doing a great job at technically what we're doing, advising our clients or our customers on what to expect and what's normal just helps them breathe easy along the journey. And it also helps the process be more efficient, because it can actually stop a lot of questions that come up along the way. That the more information I provide to clients, the less little questions keep popping up, and the more I can actually efficiently conduct the process. So the more information you give, the less likely there's going to be all these other random obstacles along the way that just arise because you haven't informed your customer enough.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice, and being really transparent and looking forward. Here's the next steps. Here's what you need to do in order to progress this forward. Here's what we're going to do. Love it.
Absolutely.
All right. How do you do your marketing?
Oh, goodness me. This is where I get to say, Jürgen, I am no expert. I would say I am quite a novice, I think, when it comes to marketing. We all have our strengths, and my strengths are probably relationships with people and being able to engage people and create trust. When it comes to marketing, how do I market? I feel the best way that I have marketed my business is with honesty, with authenticity, and with integrity, which means even down to simple things like saying, I don't really know marketing that well, or things like, I don't have 30 years real estate experience. I think being true to our story and true to who we are and our journey and what has brought us here in the here and now with what we can serve with our business, I actually think that is one of the best marketing tools I have used. And I think that's because it makes me appear real, that I'm not here saying, yes, I'm great at all these things, and this is my background, and it's like a checklist of perfect background. I let people know part of my brand story is that very much I fell into business and fell into property as a single mom in the Sydney rental market. I experienced high rents. I experienced what it was like trying to save for a deposit and get into the market, and how I had to mentally pivot and leave a career that I was trained in and kind of navigate into business as a survival mechanism for my family. And rather than deny that, I actually utilize that in my business story and say, this is how I got to where I am. And it had a lot of glitches along the way. It wasn't glamorous. It was very real. And I think that has been great marketing for me without realizing it, just that authenticity, because people feel they can relate. They go, yes, she's not sitting here saying, you know, she was a millionaire at age 23. She's really like telling it like it is, that there were a lot of hard yards. So what I try to do is be very true to who I am. I share a lot online and in the public about psychology, because that is my background and it is a passion. I share quite a lot about tips and tricks, and I guess what people may call insider information that, you know, people wouldn't normally share. They'd hold it, they'd play those cards close to their chest. I share it. I want other people to win. I speak that online a lot. I'm very positive. I'm very motivated. And they are all, in a philosophical context, my marketing tools. It's who I am. So I guess I market me just as I am, flaws and all. And that has ironically proven quite successful for me. I do learn along the way, you know, from others. There's experts out there that will say, Kitty, you may need to spruce up your website a bit and make it a little bit more user-friendly. And I'm like, great tip. And so I do take advantage of the marketing experts out there that give me tips and guidance along the way to fine-tune things. But I guess for your listeners, I would say the best marketing advice I could bring is to say, know who you are. Honestly, know who you are and be who you are, because that gives you individual distinction. And that is the best marketing tool in any industry. You want that distinction, that unique point of difference within business. And there's no one that can do it like you do. If you are real enough and understand yourself enough to know exactly who you are and just present that.
Yeah, I love it. There's so much, again, so much in that that I love. I mean, the idea that, you know, you own your story and you take that to your advantage, because it's actually what's brought you here to where you are right now, and all the success that you've had right now. And yes, there are ups and downs along the way, and that's okay, because there were lessons there, and you can possibly help other people avoid some of those downs.
Absolutely.
And then the idea of sharing lots of information, that, and I think that's one of the most underrated marketing strategies around. So people looking for property see you giving away tips, ideas, and that are helpful to them without any expectation of anything in return. But they're going to think of you when they say, hey, I actually want to get a property, a buyer agent to help me buy this property. So they'll think of you.
I'm a firm believer there's enough to go around, Jürgen. So
exactly,
no matter what I share, I'm a firm believer there'll be some people that will gain from that and go away. But there'll be others that, as you say, will go, gee, that's really handy. She knows her stuff. I could do it myself, but I think I'd be better off engaging her services. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I had to laugh because you reminded me when you were talking about authentic and sharing your flaws as well. I had to laugh because there was a post on LinkedIn a couple of days ago, and it was a young chap dressed in this really expensive suit. You know, he looked like he'd just come from a hairstylist. He was made up, you know, it looked like he'd spent thousands of dollars on his clothes and his makeup and everything, ready for an appearance on an expensive photo shoot or, you know, movie set. He had, you know, one of the top S-class Mercedes behind him, and then the rest of it was just a white background, so clearly taken in a studio. And his post talked about personal brand and how it was really important to make the right first impression. And he was kind of putting this out there as the right first impression. And by the time I saw this post, there were about 50 comments already. And I only saw it because a couple of my contacts saw the post. And one of the guys that posted, Steve Sims, I'll give him a shout out. Steve's been on the podcast here, and Steve is a no BS kind of guy. So he was very diplomatic, actually, I thought, because he just put in his comment, does this sort of stuff work anymore? And then, of course, there were lots of other comments that basically turned it around and said, well, this is, you know, clearly not authentic.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, Jürgen. It's so funny you say that, because I feel the real estate industry, obviously, is the industry I work in. And I feel like I am the most non-real estate-y real estate person. And I feel like the industry, similar to the gentleman you mentioned, the photo, the Mercedes, the white background, I feel like, and you know, I may be shot for saying this, but I feel like the real estate industry needs a makeover. I feel like it's stuck in the 1980s. And it's like, come on, folks, you know, people want real. They want to connect. They want to know who you are, your personal brand. And that brand doesn't have to be perfect. As I say, it doesn't have to show flashy perfection. It just needs to be real. And I think, as you say, people can sniff out the BS. So if they follow you on social media, you better make sure that there's continuity in your brand. And if you're falsifying yourself because you're trying to project this holier-than-thou kind of brand that it's all sheer perfection, you're going to stuff up at some point because you know what? You're human. But when you stuff up, you're going to be crucified then because you're trying to present something that you're not. It's better to go, this is who I am. These are my strengths. These are also my weaknesses, or this is where I come from. I am constantly growth in motion. You know, I'm learning as I go. And I think the more that we can say, yeah, we know these things, but hey, there's lots we don't know. And I've just learned this, or good point over there. I'm going to take that on because I think that can improve what I'm doing. The more we do that, the more real we are. And I think the more people want to deal with us because they trust us. And there's nothing like that flashy veneer smile and Mercedes and white studio that I think nowadays, right from the get-go, it can put people off because they know, you know, hello Photoshop or hello, you know, things like that. And it just sets up the tone for, is this believable? Let me question this. So I'm with you that authenticity, it's a bit of a flavor of the month term. I think everyone's striving for authenticity, and integrity is another one. I think, you know, integrity, authenticity. But I think if we can be confident enough in our own skin, and as I say, that's not in an arrogant way. It's in a, oh goodness, this is who I am. And, you know, these may be my great points and these may be my limitations. I think putting those together, they're the front runners for success. Absolute front runners for success. Even when it comes to presentation, when I got some of my professional photos done recently, I'm wearing a denim jacket. I'm a casual girl. I don't do blazers. I don't do high heels. I don't do all this snazzy corporate look. I'm smart casual, and I want my brand to present as that. And look, I had a couple of people going, ooh, but in real estate, it's like this. And I went, well, stuff that. This is who I am. And the right potential clients will connect with me because of that. And the people that say want that suited studio Mercedes feel, there are other people out there that can satisfy those clients because that's not me. And I'd rather just be me. Yeah, so yeah. I think that's the tips and tricks along the way. Just be you and keep your brand as close to you as possible, because I think that's the foundation of a winning formula in business.
I love it. Well, we're, you know, one of the mantras of my business is let's make marketing human again. So, and I was speaking this week to another guest on the podcast who does networking events, and he says that the traditional networking went suck and he does it differently. He basically puts people together and enables really deep connections. And I said, okay, well, your mantra should be let's make networking human again. So I think let's make everything human again. Let's make the real estate industry human again as well.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of my goals, you know. My goal is to innovate and to, you know, hopefully within the next 5 to 10 years, bring a wave of change through the real estate industry, at least through the buyer's agent sector, by going, this is the way I do it. And I've been successful so far. So I plan on keeping up the innovation, keeping up the progress, and keeping it real. So let's see whether the real estate industry can be, in the nicest way, forced to change a little bit, because as time goes on and business gets tougher and it hits, you know, the industry in the hip pocket, I'm sure it will encourage the industry to see that its customer base is desperately itching for something that's beyond the 1980s. Something more than 21st century.
Great. All right. Well, this is fabulous, Kitty. I mean, on that note, hopefully a positive note, I think it's a good point to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. And I think we've covered pretty well all these questions, but maybe you can give us a real snappy summary and inspire our audience to go and do something awesome as a result today.
Let's do it. Okay. Yeah.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Know who they are.
Yep. And really understand
that. It's as simple as that. You have to know who you are before you can start anything else. You have to have a solid foundation in knowing who you are, what your strengths are, your limitations. No fluff, no wannabe, no idealism. You have to know that. It is the essence of being able to create in general.
Yeah, fabulous. And you know, you've elaborated on that quite a bit throughout the conversation today. So great. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
The best thing I've done to develop new ideas is to look at my clients and listen to my clients and fill in the gaps of what they're after. So the important take home from this is, don't look at competitors. Don't bother. Don't bother wasting your time looking at what everyone else is doing and chasing other competitors. Look at your client base. Look at their pain points. Look at what's stressing them. Look at what's missing for them. Look at what they need. Answer that.
I love it. That's the core of our marketing, really. And, you know, the wonderful thing there also is filling in the gaps and joining the dots. So great advice there. Do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Favorite resource? This is a bit left field, but I'm going to be really honest with you, and you're probably not expecting this, mindfulness. Mindfulness. I know that is probably not the type of resource you were thinking of, but I would say to anyone that is in business, especially entrepreneurs with innovative minds, often our minds are our greatest gift, but our worst nightmare as well. So the best resource that I feel I turn to is mindfulness and learning how to be present, power down, reset, and just be. Because when that mind rests, I feel it's at its most constructive time. And that's where the creative juices and all the innovative ideas come from. If you think you're just powering along and that's where it's all going to come from, I think you're more likely to lead to burnout. Best resource, mindfulness.
How do you practice mindfulness?
I have an app, and I spend 45 minutes one part of the day, and I also have another 10 minutes at another part of the day. I go through different guided mindfulness programs during the day. I always make sure I stop, no matter how busy the day is. It's a stop and a 45 minutes guided mindfulness meditation, so to speak. Also, for 10 minutes at another point throughout the day, I do guided breathing. And I know it sounds woo-woo to your listeners, and trust me, I'm not woo-woo at all, but I definitely found for me to be my most productive, my mind has to stop, and I have to allow my parasympathetic nervous system to take over and reset, and it just allows you to fire up with the gusto you would not believe. So,
And I think there's a lot of scientific evidence that says, you know, if you can distract your mind or put your mind on pause from, you know, the day-to-day stuff that's going on all the time, that it actually is really beneficial. And there's lots of conversation right now in the space of mental health and mental well-being particularly for entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurship can be pretty stressful. So, yeah, and you'll appreciate this. Going back a few years now, I had neuroscientist Dr. Fiona Kerr on the show, and she talked about giving yourself permission to daydream and just look out the window and stare and go blank daydream, which to me is probably another mindfulness practice.
I think it's integral for the entrepreneurial mind to have an outlet that's a downtime kind of outlet or a reset. I think the entrepreneurial mind, you know, there's certain personality traits that go with the entrepreneurial mind, the type A personality, and we are so prone to burnout. It's like the two sides of a coin. And I think if we can find whatever means that is to switch off, whatever resource that is, I think it will be our most powerful resource to actually allow true innovation.
Great. All right. Now, I think we've covered this one as well, but maybe you can just recap again. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
What's the best way to keep a client on track? Listen to the client, truly listen to the client, and meet their needs, not yours. It's about them, and never forget that. It's about them. It's not about you. It's not about your bank account. It's not about your ego. It's not about your KPIs. It's about your client and their needs.
Love it. Yeah. And you know, your whole process that you've outlined for us today is very clearly following that principle. And finally, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to differentiate themselves?
I think I did cover this one.
Yeah, we covered that one.
wholeheartedly understand your personal brand. And I think while that sounds simple, it's actually harder for people to do than they realize. But I think the most important thing you can do is understand your personal brand, understand your personal brand story, and use that as the seeds of growth in your business. Because once you understand your true, authentic personal brand, everything you do thereafter, every time you speak, every time you appear online, everything you do in your business is another piece to that personal brand puzzle. And it all comes together to create a really synergistic business model for your customer base. So I think that personal branding in this day and age is integral to get correct, to get right.
Love it. Yeah. And the very last episode was with Rebecca Arbona, who's a brand specialist and particularly in naming brands. And her process involves digging deep and really digging deep into your own why and your own brand story. So this is a great reinforcement of what she talked about on the last episode.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
Be there.
Thanks, Kitty. This has been absolutely fabulous. I've really enjoyed this. Now, where can people find out more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thanks for what you've shared today?
No, thank you. Well, anyone that is looking to get in touch, I am on LinkedIn at Kitty Parker Buyers Agent. Alternatively, there's obviously my website, and that's kittyandmiles.com.au, and that's Miles with an I. I'm also on Facebook at Kitty Parker. I'm pretty much everywhere, Jürgen. But otherwise, people are welcome to Google my name, Kitty Parker, and a plethora comes up there. So you can find me here, there, and everywhere.
Great. And we'll put some links in the show notes to those sites you've mentioned. Now, do you have any parting advice for our listener today?
Parting advice. I think the key piece of advice for people listening to this is to make that move, that there will be a number of listeners that will have entrepreneurial minds or entrepreneurial spirits or have that innovative, I don't want to say innovative buzz, but, you know, no pun intended there. But the key piece of advice, I don't want to steal a Nike slogan, but it's just do it. Action is where it's at. So for anyone there that has been thinking, contemplating, etc., you just need to do it. It doesn't matter whether you succeed or fail. In fact, I'm quietly confident many people you've had on your show will admit we've all had failures. We've all failed. And it doesn't matter whether you win or lose. It's about partaking in the game. So get out there, take action, get it from your head and do. That's the best piece of advice I could tell anyone. Just go and do it.
Yeah, I love it. And failure is just feedback, right? That's what my business coach
reminds me of.
Yeah, it's a lesson. Yes. Okay, you have to do that different because that didn't work. Or maybe it's the wrong time.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Now, finally, who's somebody else I need to get on the Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Okay. Who would I think of? Who should we bring on here? Oh, I do know somebody I know somebody that has a bit of an eclectic background and is an absolute whiz in the online social media space. So when we're talking about innovative social media, I know the director of the agency is called Show Off Agency, and the director is Kim Alfredi. And she is an absolute gun with innovative social media, walks her own walk, and really knows how to drive home advanced social media for her clients. And I know these days, you know, the world is all about social media, but as we all know, we can all fall into a bit of sheep mentality in social media. And this is somebody that is really a mover and shaker in the innovative social media space. So I think she would be an absolute fabulous guest. And she's funny to boot. So great to listen to.
All right. Well, we'll get an introduction from you to Kim and see if we can get her on the show as well. That'd be fabulous.
Done.
Okay, now thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously on the Innova Buzz podcast today. Kitty, I've really, really enjoyed this and I've learned so much more about what's involved in being a buyer's advocate and how you've got your process down pat and how deeply you care about your clients and their success. That's the big message that's come through for me today. So thanks for sharing all that with us today. I wish you all the best for the future and let's stay in touch.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show as well. It was absolutely wonderful. It was like a grand conversation. All we needed was the virtual cup of tea and Bickies, and it would have been 100%. But I hope I've shared some pearls of wisdom there, and I hope your listeners have found it interesting and that their, you know, little seeds have been planted in their minds too.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. So thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed that wonderfully engaging and informative conversation with Kitty and took something away from her episode. Now, the real estate industry might be some way from your business and something a little different to other sectors represented on our podcast. But there's so much to learn from Kitty's episode around customer service, around fulfilling customer needs, listening with empathy, and working with good current data and insights that gives. I'd love to know what you took away from Kitty's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Kitty Parker. That is KittyParker. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Kitty Parker. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Kitty there, as well as links to the Kitty and Miles website, her social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Kitty suggested that we have a conversation with Kim L. Feldy of the Show Off Agency on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Kim, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Kitty Parker. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including strategy and innovation expert Rita McGrath and Chris Barras-Brown of Upping Your Elvis. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.